cometh the hour, cometh the mothership, that is Coast to Coast AM. Good evening, everybody. As ship's Captain Nori says, across the country and around the world, this is the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM, a little thing that I personally like to call the caravan to midnight. And golly, are we getting closer. The theme of tonight's program is determining exactly where the dividing line is between crazy and stupid. Oh, it's not all that harsh. Well, it started like this. One slightly frustrated bleat. Yes, I said bleat. For years, I woke up as a recovering sheeple, so it was a little bit of a bleat. But I'd like to think that I'm becoming more of a black sheep, a regular troublemaker, if you will. Anyway, I asked the question, must have been talking to Mr. Bloom, Howard Bloom, have we just become a nation of idiots? And then an email showed up. And I responded to the email after reading it and savoring it for a couple of days, and I thought, we've got to have him back. Let us try. Not easy to get this man back, an MIT man, an SDI man, intimately involved as an inventor with the Excimer laser, on the program as quickly and fast on the heels as his last presence, just not even a couple of months ago, I think. I refer to, of course, Dr. George Hart, a rational man, and we're going to discuss just exactly what is happening to us to turn us into, well, oblivionites. Cases in point, scanning the news for you very quickly. Let's see. Town considers banning smokers from smoking outside their own homes. Well, that's not awfully stupid. Man charged with chopping off friend's hand for insurance cash. That's kind of stupid. Cops say robber tried to buy back the gun from the victims. That's extraordinarily stupid. An ex-cop admits robbing a bank to get health benefits in federal prison. PETA kills more than 95% of pets in its care. Well, it doesn't get any better. And, of course, some Korans were accidentally burned, and now the parts of the Middle East are on fire. On an uplifting note, the Pentagon says U.S. citizens accused of supporting terrorism can be assassinated. A high-ranking Pentagon lawyer argued Wednesday that U.S. citizens accused of having ties to terror groups can legitimately be targeted for assassination. Maybe we should change it to something more gentle, like neutralization or deletion. Quote from Defense Department General Counsel J.C. Johnson, that's J-E-H, perhaps it's J.C. Johnson. Belligerents who also happen to be U.S. citizens do not enjoy immunity where non-citizen belligerents are valid military objectives. Fine. The great state of Wyoming. State representatives on Friday advanced legislation to launch a study into what Wyoming should do in the event of a complete economic or political collapse in the United States. House Bill 85 passed on first reading by a voice vote. It would create a state-run government continuity task force, which would study and prepare Wyoming for potential catastrophes, from disruption in food and energy supplies to a complete meltdown of the federal government. That's forward thinking and probably altogether not a bad idea. And last but not least, the world's most, not notorious atheist, but certainly has the highest profile, that would be Richard Dawkins, says he can't be sure God does not exist. He doesn't use a scale of 1 to 10. He says he's a 6.9 on a scale of 1 to 7. Richard, what are you talking about? Anyway, good man, rational man. He's an open-minded man, at least. And that's pretty much all the news that's fit to line the birdcage with. So, onward. Onward. That is an expression used by Dr. George Hart. We shall bring him on shortly. Stand by. This is Coast to Coast AM. Without further ado, let us welcome onto the program Dr. George Hart. Welcome back, sir.
Good to be here, John. How are you doing?
Oh, that's great to have you here tonight. We sure got into it. All it took was one comment from me, and then an email, and then another email, and here we are. It's just great that you were able to come on the show tonight.
It's a very timely topic, and it meshes perfectly with your following guest, Jonathan Zapp, who, in viewing Wall Street as perhaps a group of psychopaths, in my view, may be an optimist. If only the problem were that simple. And that's what we will get into in this hour. There may be something far larger and more disturbing going on.
Yes, indeed. I neglected to mention, but I think I was saving it for later, that Jonathan Zapp he's way into this. Psychopaths that are running the asylum. And as you say, it could be a lot worse than that. So let us begin at the beginning, which is your comment that a person at MIT that you admired made mention of information diseases.
Yes, this was the absolutely brilliant cultural historian William Irwin Thompson, who wrote very interesting and important books such as Darkness and Scattered Light, just looking at American and global society. And as early as the 1970s, he said with absolute certainty that two things were about to happen. One was we were embarking on what would be viewed in retrospect as a new set of dark ages or a dark age, where we were peaking it as a culture at that moment. But more importantly, in terms of what we're dealing with now, he forecast that we would enter into a period of what would be later recognized as information diseases. That we oftentimes throw around the term information age, and we know we're swimming in a sea of information. But he identified the fact that in time, this would actually take a toll on us in many different ways. One symptom or one form of the disease could be paranoia, which is sort of a misintegration of input, information from the outside. The other thing that he saw at the time, particularly falling on the heels of the Kennedy assassination, were conspiracy theories, that so much information would be ricocheting around that we would never get to the bottom of certain key questions about what happened there, whether it's the Kennedy assassination or Watergate or, you know, bringing us up to 9/11 and other events like that, that the end result would be confusion and a form of insanity. That when on these very important matters, you could not sort out what was going on, we would start to come unglued as a society. Beyond that, and we live with this every day, we just weren't born to cope with the torrent of information that comes at us in tweets and blogs and emails and web browsing. It changes the way our minds work, and we become great information consumers. But our decision-making seems to have taken a step into the twilight zone.
So when we are exposed to this news, like we were about the Kennedy assassination, for example, that was about as dramatic as it's going to get, other than an A-bomb going off in your town. Once we have the questions, then the answers are the things that we want, and not getting them makes us nuts. I mean, is that where we're headed here?
Any nation, any culture, any tribe, inserting key moments when something horrific or tremendous happens, has an essential need to find out what happened there. And we form these things like the Warren Commission or the 9/11 Commission, and what comes out of that process just has an odor to it. It smells like whitewash. It smells like cover-up. And then you develop a culture of paranoia that leads to things like the X-Files being consumed on TV, where there's a sense of, well, the truth is out there, but you will never get your hands on it. And you cannot stay sane as a culture when you're operating in that kind of climate.
What symptoms do you see? What symptoms do you observe in the populace in general? Because, of course, we are all individuals, and yet we behave on a collective basis.
One key and important symptom is a paradoxical dumbing down of people that you would swear would have to be very, very bright. The head of Citibank, the head of Merrill Lynch, the head of Morgan Chase, other governmental figures, all blowing themselves up. As I had mentioned to you, I think a very useful training film for the world that we're moving into is the movie Idiocracy, starring Luke Wilson, that plays less these days like a comedy and more like a documentary. And so, it, for example, you can cite the cover of Fortune magazine in November 2007, where on a business magazine you have the big, bold, red-letter headline, "What were they smoking?" That the decision-making was so bad that major firms like Merrill Lynch, like Citibank, were either totally destroyed or brought to the edge of destruction. But in other parts of the culture, we have politicians blowing themselves up like a string of Chinese firecrackers, particularly through various sex scandals, whether it's John Edwards or Elliot Spitzer or Schwarzenegger. The list is incredibly long. You know, Anthony Weiner.
Yep.
And then you go into other parts of popular culture, like, what was Tiger Woods thinking? It wasn't just an affair, it was a large sequence of things. Then you go up to the global scale, where we have all of Europe and the United States buried up to their eyeballs in debt, and the answer to this is more debt. There's just a collapse of judgment, particularly related to this for anyone who saw the HBO special documentary movie, Too Big to Fail, based on the book by Andrew Ross Sorkin. You have Secretary of Treasury Hank Paulson, who had been the head of Goldman Sachs, doing his best, but acting like a person who's somewhat dim, if not brain damaged, always sort of a half a second behind the curveball as it comes across the plate, and disaster after disaster in October 2008, really deriving from that dimness. And it leaves you wondering, what is going on here? You know, have we become stupefied?
Well, this all ties into what Orwell had to say about it. And this work that you did, I can't remember, you had written a commentary. Anyway, I'm reading it here, but it doesn't have a title.
Right. It brings 1984 up to date and stresses aspects of our current information reality that Orwell could have never anticipated. In 1984, he had this totalitarian dictatorial state putting little telescreens in everybody's home so the government could keep their eye on them. And what's pretty amusing is that in a future that Orwell could not have envisioned, the government doesn't have to take those intrusive steps. We do it for them. We carry around our cell phones with the cameras that can be tapped into, or our tablet computers or laptops. We're tweeting and blogging and emailing and jumping up to Facebook, telling anybody that would be interested everything they would ever want to know about ourselves. So the problem the government has is just, how do you sift through this tidal wave of information in large data processing facilities? And at the same time, anyone who isn't exposing themselves totally becomes immediately suspect for that very fact in itself. It's a very strange world that I think Orwell would have found fascinating.
When did you write this?
Just in the last week.
Oh, okay, gotcha. But this is, of course, we would much rather hear you speak than to subject the audience to me reading this, but that's something that you wrote. I mean, all of this is extremely rich. But let me just pass this along. Also very reminiscent of 1984 is the class and income segmentation of American society at present. This has been driven home by the Occupy Wall Street movement with its popularization of the terms the 1% and the 99%. Taking Orwell's view much further than he would have himself, the efficiencies of modern technology make possible for the 1% of the 1% of the 1% to exert near total control over the rest of society. At the same time, what the population sees of professional politicians, to whom they give a 9% approval rating, leaves the American electorate actually hoping that there are some smart individuals behind the scenes actually running things. But that does not appear to be the case.
No, well, it may be, because You know, if you ask the trick question, what do Mitt Romney and Barack Obama most have in common? And the answer is their number one contributor is Goldman Sachs. That some of the things that people like Alex Jones have put out there for years may not be that far-fetched. And one would hope, as I write there, that there are some smart individuals behind the levers and behind the steering wheel driving things. Because if you think of Barack Obama, who seems like a very bright individual, but you look at the trail behind of things like Solyndra and all of the very peculiar energy investments he made, or you go to President George W. Bush, who before his election to president looked like a fairly sharp individual acting as governor, if you see videotapes at the time, and then as president became this more and more, again to use the word, stupefied looking person. At the time of 9/11, sitting there in a classroom with an upside-down book in his lap, looking like he was about to start drooling. At that point, you say, dear God, let's hope the Illuminati are running things, because if it's these guys, we're in trouble.
Well, that's really true. And you know, you mentioned Goldman Sachs. And now we've heard recently that Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae or whoever's left are actually betting against... I mean, isn't this just amazing? Let's delve into economics just for a moment here. For 2 years, 0% financing, 15 minutes out of bankruptcy, 0% financing with absolutely no income verification, 0% financing, and then the dictum comes down from on high, that would be D.C., that you will lend these people the money for these mortgages, or you'll suffer the consequences for it. So actually, there were widespread rumors and some confirmations that the federal government actually pressured the banks to make loans that the banks would not otherwise have done. And so what happens then? These mortgages go bad, and who bails out these companies? The taxpayer. So where is the motivation to have good performing loans when you can be bailed out all at one time, when you have masses of them go bad? Would you expand on this a little?
Well, there are a couple of things there. One, the end result is a massive wealth transfer from the middle class to these banks and other financial institutions that went wild with this. I'm speaking of trillions of dollars. It's trillions of dollars of bailout, plus the inflation we're going to end up with to, again, pay off all of this as the Federal Reserve keeps creating money out of nowhere, that in the end will be another tax in the form of inflation. But it goes into the totally surreal where the same government, quasi-government lending institutions, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, then changed gears and went into a 180, and over the last couple of years raised the refinancing criteria so high that very few people could qualify. And knowing that they were doing that, Freddie Mac, for its own account, started betting using derivatives that interest rates, mortgage interest rates, would stay high, not caring at all for the fact that in terms of American homeowners, you really wanted those mortgage interest rates on the average to go down. They were going to profit, and profit magnificently, from the rate staying up. And the kicker on all of this is the individual responsible for making these decisions, a George W. Bush appointee, is beyond presidential removal unless he's found making love to a sheep on the National Mall. It's a remarkable situation.
You know what? This is going to require a longer answer. As a matter of fact, we have LA Command says 2 minutes. So let me just tell our audience this a little piece from what you wrote. As in Orwell's 1984, it was the middle class rather than the lower class which was viewed as the real threat by those in control. Does this sound familiar?
This is, I think, part of what we're seeing is this impoverishment of the middle class. In many ways, higher taxation, facing inflation, and as they move into retirement, you can't live on the interest rates that you get in retirement anymore, so that you'll have a ruling elite, a non-tax-paying lower group that the ruling elite can count on the votes of to get to the 51% level, and then the deck will be stacked perfectly in an Orwellian sense.
Yes, you wrote wage freezes, ever-ascending taxation, and wealth-destroying inflation, all at the service of avoiding the threat of a global economic collapse. That fear of a global economic collapse has been repeated nonstop, 24 hours a day, for at least 4 years.
And fear is the great controlling mechanism of all governments.
We're speaking with Dr. George Hart tonight, and we're going to come back in just a second, and I want to know his opinion on what would have happened if those banks had failed. And we'll get into fear, and then the antidote to it when we return shortly on Coast to Coast AM. Some of the admirers of the bumper music, which I wait until the last minute to select, usually, well, you know, want to contour it properly, will be posted on the Coast to Coast AM website, which you should probably take a look at anyway, because there's some interesting stuff there. The feature story is Earth's space junk problem. Spent rockets, dead satellites, millions of pieces of debris have left Earth amidst a space junk cloud. And then listeners emailed UFO amongst the clouds. And the hot story is small town gets court to ban fracking. So maybe their earthquake thing will reduce in frequency. Very quickly, thanks to everybody for joining Coast Insider. The radio landscape is shifting, and we are shifting with it. And you will do yourself a service and help us out, too. It's inexpensive. You don't have to do the whole shot. It's cheaper if you do the whole shot for a year, but you don't have to. There's no contract, and you will enjoy it. 3 years of archive shows. Listen to them when you want to, and that's how it is. When we come back with Dr. George Hart, we're going to talk about what would have happened if those banks had actually failed, the fear factor, can information actually cause a disease in people? I mean, a real one. And then what is the possible antidote? We shall return. Please stand by. This is Coast to Coast AM. Wells in with you for the night. Dr. George Hart is with us. Say, what about that, Dr. George Hart? What would have happened to those banks, do you think? What would have happened to us if those banks, which were too large to allow to fail, what would have happened if they had failed?
One possibility that never seemed to have been explored at the time, because we were just bombarded, as I said, 24 hours a day with fear about them going out of business, was that you had institutions like Goldman Sachs who, with their right hand, were putting together all of these mortgage-backed securities that they knew were explosive landmines, and with their left hand, Goldman Sachs was arranging with people like John Paulson to profit mightily when all of this blew up. Now, when we got to October through December 2008, rather than pouring $1 to $2 trillion into these smoking holes in the ground that Wall Street had erected, it seemed like another option should have been considered, and that would be to set up a new series of essentially citizen-owned federal banks around the country. Just wave goodbye to those that through greed and stupidity had destroyed themselves and say, look, why pour more money after bad? Let's just start anew here if we're going to have to spend a couple of trillion anyway and turn the Federal Reserve printing presses loose. But that opportunity was never explored, where each of those banks, if there were 100 of them and you had on $1 trillion, could have been financed with $10 billion. Similarly, in Europe, you have all this agony that's been going on for 2 years about Greece. It's not about Greece. It's about the banks and other institutions that lent to Greece. That whole settlement that was reached earlier this week does nothing for the Greek people. It just protects the banks. And the truth behind all of this is that none of it is actually about mortgages and bad mortgages and banks that lent money on either loans to Greece or mortgages and didn't get it back. It's the roughly $600 trillion in side bets that were placed by institutions in credit default swaps and interest rate swaps on just what would happen. As I think I mentioned to you, John, this would be like living in your home and you would have fire insurance on the home. But imagine what it would be like living in that home if everybody in town were allowed to take out fire insurance on your home, how long do you think it would be before you had an accident? And that's the situation we've moved into now. Everybody's breathing heavy about what happens if these credit default swaps have to be paid off on. This insurance on the loans to Greece, there's not enough money on the planet to pay it off. At some point, the citizens of the world have to stand up and say, the hell with it. We will pay off those people who actually held the bonds and the loans, but we don't care about the side bets. And anybody stupid enough or greedy enough to have engaged in that, well, good luck to you. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare that will probably take a decade or two to get out of.
Now, a million is a thousand thousands, and a billion is a thousand millions. So it follows that a trillion is a million millions?
Yes.
14 million little stacks, each $1 million. So what? Yes. Where do you see this going? There's not enough cash. There's not ever going to be enough cash. Do we need to expand our markets out into the solar system and hopefully suck some cash out of the UFO guys? Or how are we, what's going to happen, Dr.
Well, essentially, the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank can solve the problem with a stroke of a key on their keyboards and just keep creating money the way they have to try to fill in the hole that's been created by all the loans that went bad. You know, the end result of some of this is, the rising price of gasoline will be the rising price of everything else around it. For now, it's been largely the rising price of the stock market, where the Federal Reserve essentially injects money into Wall Street, and the only place they really have to put that money is either in Treasury bills or stocks. It's a strange world we've moved into that has nothing to do with economics as we once knew it. I would say, though, it's probably useful to step back and go back to this question of information perhaps creating diseases and to give a sense of how this could happen. Is this more than a metaphor? We've seen this sort of thing before as humanity moves into new environments that they become susceptible to diseases that were not common before. When England became a naval power and had the British Navy as well as commercial ships everywhere, suddenly scurvy became a problem, the lack of vitamin C. A solution was eventually found, but it was a disease brought about by a new environment. We've discovered in the last month that astronauts in a zero-G environment can start running into severe eyesight problems due to the lack of gravity. Maybe or maybe not a solution will be found there. I think we've had the same thing occur in this world of information. We get lost in our multiple computer screens in front of us, and I think for a lot of decision makers, everything now has the flavor of a virtual reality. And part of the problem there is that real risk is not recognized for the real risk it is. A casebook study there would be John Corzine, another former head of Goldman Sachs, former governor of New Jersey, former senator, who goes into a company, MF Global, and manages to blow the whole company up, bankrupting many poor individuals around the United States, that particularly farmers, that were selling their crops in advance through MF Global. That this something radically has gone wrong with our thinking process. I would also say, rather than just sitting here lamenting the situation, I'd like to actually engage the coast-to-coast audience in one of the positive things that the new world of information makes possible, and that is this notion of crowdsourcing, of finding solutions to problems through putting the group mind together individually and collectively to look at things. One of the notions that I've mentioned on a previous appearance with you is the fact that we talk about living in this information age that may have information diseases, but we don't even have the smallest baby step towards an understanding of information in and of itself. That we have this term information theory, and you would think that would be it, but actually information theory is only about the representation and communication of information, not the thing in and of itself, and particularly how information can interact with itself, which we're seeing a lot of these days. So what I'm calling for, and maybe out in the audience there's one of them, is a modern-day Sir Isaac Newton to invent a new science of information. What's not greatly appreciated about Newton was that the first problem he had to get his mind around is, what is mass? There were all kinds of odd notions about how mass resisted force, and it made it almost like a living object. He finally straightened out the concept of mass and force and velocity and acceleration. Here, I think that we do not have, believe it or not, a elementary concept of what's the unit quantity of information. It all is the same as far as information theory goes. I can give you five characters, and it could be the word paper, P-A-P-E-R, or it could be E equals MC squared. And one contains a lot more significance and meaning than the other. And it's that word meaning that's the key here, that we need to get our mind around. What is the elemental unit of meaning, and how does meaning interact with meaning to create more? And so it'd be an elementary theory of information and something I term informational kinetics of how does information spawn more information in a way that may go way beyond exponential to something far more explosive. And I think we're getting close to it, and it behooves us to wrap our minds around what that means, both in terms of what I'll call the real world, but also in terms of some of the aspects of Coast to Coast. If you think about favorite topics on Coast to Coast, like remote viewing or precognition or telepathy or premonitions or especially synchronicities, all of those involve information coming to parties in some very mysterious way that really has nothing to do with physics or string theory. It's information playing peculiar games in the universe. And there's a strong hint there that we need to learn something about what information can do. In the same way in the 1950s, we learned what information does in every cell of our bodies. We are living dances of information.
How best? I mean, do we begin with a blog? I mean, is that how it's done? When we call upon the Coast listeners to get into it because they're into it already, is that where you start? How do they do this? How to form a network of thinkers?
I think that would probably be it, and part of the process here would actually be even to learn how do you invent the means of communicating about this. A linear blog might just get confusing. I think step one in this is a vow of humility to understand that this is a far tougher topic than you might imagine. There's a wonderful book called The Great Equations that describes the confusion that Newton had to go through to get straight with the concept of mass. I think we have to do the same thing here with this concept of information as I'm using it and meaning. And then once we get that central concept together, we can move forward. But yes, a blog would be a wonderful first step.
Dr. George Hart, I would like to ask you this question. This came in the form of an email, and this is pretty good. Is this not intention masquerading as stupidity that's going on in our government, banking, treasury, and industry? I think that's kind of a good question.
It's easy to say yes and somewhat satisfying, but when you look at the number of very top key figures who have ruined their careers and their reputations, like John Corzine, like Hank Paulson, it's not that simple. And I think this has more to do with something like Invasion of the Body Snatchers than just people pulling levers to enrich themselves. A lot of these people actually impoverished themselves and destroyed their reputations forever. You can see that this maneuver has, set up all of Europe for 10 to 20 years of misery. Yes, some few individuals may have profited, but very many key individuals who just keep blowing it. Another simple example, Reed Hastings, the celebrated CEO of Netflix, managing to, in the past year, not only boot the ball, but stab the ball and then sit on the ball as far as driving customers away and ruining a company. I'd be open to the idea of intention, but keep your eye on the possibility of something far more pernicious. Because if we are moving into the future depicted in the movie Idiocracy, we better wake up quickly. And along those lines, and a key thought on this is that I think everyone has to pay very close attention to how susceptible really great countries and civilizations are to outbreaks of mass insanity. If you look at Germany in the 1930s, you have one of the best educated countries on the planet with a very noble tradition. And yet, under stress, that country embarked on a very dark path that led nearly to its own total destruction with things like the Nuremberg rallies and Hitler and the German people deciding they could take on the world. And there you saw some positive virtues of the Germans, a very militaristic and proud military tradition, a proud intellectual tradition, and that all became overheated and led to mass insanity. In the United States, you had capitalism and also a real appetite for credit get together over the last 20 years and reach this orgasm of mass insane consumption. I think we're following a path similar to Germany's in terms of the degree of insanity, but different in its character.
Do you think this is fueled by fear with this ongoing rolling war mentality we have going on now?
That's probably a good part of it. You start adding together different factors that means that people are not thinking clearly, and one of them is fear, that there's nothing like the paralysis that fear provides. And then you add to it this information bombardment, and then as frosting of the cake, you bring in this other thing we mentioned at the onset of the show, of in key case after key case, the Kennedy assassination, 9/11, the list is long. We are denied important information about what's really going on, and it produces a confusion and worse yet, a passivity that just lets things literally go to hell.
I predict that in the future, this information will be transmitted to the population at large from people that will not actually be people. They will be drawn and constructed with computer graphics. They will look exactly like people, but they will be based on focus groups and what sort of a face, hair color, suit, skirt, whatever, that people find most appealing and most trustworthy. And I think there's a good chance that Bob over here on this end of the block will not be getting the same news as Molly on this end, this other end of the block, because of this digital thing. They'll just send the information to whomever and whenever. We are down to 2 minutes now. That's the fastest hour of my whole life. I have no idea that this will actually happen, Dr. George Hart, but I would like to go to Mothership Command and have you, well, an honorary commission to become our science, technology, and future officer, our chief analyst. And I would love to have you come back on this program anytime that you have time, even if it's for 15 or 20 minutes, just to tell us some of your observations. So I'm going to bother you about that and see if I can get you to do it, because 1 hour is just not enough.
And I would certainly welcome that. And offline, you and I can see about establishing a mechanism where the best and the brightest among the coast-to-coast audience can help all of us think through this thing.
There's the mandate, people, from Dr. George Hart. Your book, The Art of Anticipation, Surfing the Waves of Change in Your Future, you can reach him at accessbest.com/Merlin. Come back soon, George, please.
Thank you so much.
Good night. All right, coming up right after the break, Jonathan Zapp is next. He'll be with us for the remainder of the program. Singularity Archetype, Psychos Running the Asylum, et al. This is Coast to Coast AM.